Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm sorry, I can't tell you where Advocate Schmidt is, but I'm his deputy.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I'm new on this committee. My name is Anshin Dreyer.
Okay.
I see my name is appearing on the register
yes, yes.
where I signed. But I don't know where Mr. Schmidt is.
Okay,
it's
all right.
A long way.
Right, it's all right. Welcome. Because the first part of the program is one area he also raised in the House. Welcome, sir. DJ, anything?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, we would like to firstly thank you for the opportunity to present to you an overview of the Department of Minerals and Energy's performance for the 2006-2007 financial year. Honorable members, we have in the past tended to report our performance only from our customers' point of view, the views of the people of South Africa. While this view provided a window on what we did as a department during the past year to fulfill our mandate, that kind of reporting does not tell our stakeholders what we are doing internally to improve our delivery efficiency. It does not tell them what we are doing internally to transform ourselves to be better placed to deliver on our mandate and to have an organization that is representative of the people of South Africa. This year, we will present a better balanced view of the performance of the department. And do you have the speaking notes? Please distribute also the speaking notes. The balanced scorecard approach allows us to report those processes that are most critical for the achievement of breakthrough performance for our customers. The challenge, however, is that the approach focuses on outcomes rather than outputs. Considering that our strategic planning early this year, our business implementation plans and measures were based on outputs rather than outcomes. It became a bit challenging for us to fully apply the outcome-based balanced scorecard to the output-based reported results. However, we have made an attempt to align our presentation on our performance results with the balanced scorecard format as requested by this committee. Indeed, Mr. Chairperson, I must say that it really was a very big challenge for us, because when we did our strategic planning at the beginning of the year, which then underpinned our business plans for the year, it was based on output, and yet the balanced scorecard, as requested by the committee, requires us to report on an outcome-based kind of an approach. But we've tried our level best, and the reason why I really want to emphasize this is for you, Chairperson, and the committee to appreciate that we really had a challenge here. If our presentation doesn't meet your requirements, it was not because of lack of trying from our part. We did try our level best. As a public service organization, we have arranged the perspectives of the balanced scorecard in terms of our priorities and interpretation. The customer perspective represents the people of South Africa as our customer, and this is where our main focus is, delivering the service to the people of the Republic. In 2 weeks' time, we will be having our annual strategic plan. And this time, we will ensure that our planning approach will correspond to the format required to present our performance at the end of the year. We hope that our next presentation of our annual report, which will then be underpinned by this year's strategic plan, which we want to focus mainly on outcomes rather than outputs, will be a better presentation indeed. As the background to the report on our performance results for last year, I would like to quickly remind the members of our key focus areas for the year under review. These were to improve our capacity to deliver on the mandate of the department, ensure security and quality of energy supply, improve our oversight over industry compliance to the mining and fuel charges, implementation of the NPRDA and continue our support of SMEs, and promote the participation of women in these sectors, focus on youth development programs. Now, coming to the improvement of our capacity to deliver on the mandate of the department, one of the department's objectives for the year under review was to assess its capacity to deliver on its mandate. Following the July 2006 cabinet decision, the department embarked on a process of assessing its capacity to deliver on its mandate, with emphasis on the area of the mining and petroleum licensing processes. The results of this assessment were approved by cabinet later in the year. Internally, the recruitment and retention of the scarce and critical skills remains a challenge for the department, particularly in view of the fact that the department's scarce skills and recruitment strategy could not be implemented as envisaged in line with the National Scarce Skills Framework. The implementation of the approved scarce skills strategy, as endorsed by the Department of Public Service and Administration, will hopefully take effect with the implementation of the new remuneration bill that is currently being discussed. Both the energy sectors have been very topical during last year and well into the year. The energy crisis in our country has been as a result of the inadequacy of our demand and supply plan that could not match the growth of our economy. To address these challenges, it was imperative that we come up with a robust integrated energy plan that will not only look at short-term solutions, but also consider how these would link to long-term sustainable solutions. By the end of this year, we had covered a lot of ground in the development of the integrated energy plan that was followed by the energy summit in September this year. During the year, both the Diamond and, Amendment and the Precious Metals Regulations were finalized after broad consultations with stakeholders. The Diamond Amendment Act, the Second Diamond Amendment Act, and the Precious Metals Act have been implemented after promulgation by the President. The State Diamond Trader and the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator Implementation Plan were finalized and rolled out. Excuse me. The transformation of the petroleum industry still remains high on our agenda. The commencement of licensing under the Petroleum Products Amendment Act during the year has given us leverage to begin to deal effectively with the promotion of transformation of the liquid fuel sector. The process started with over 12,500 applications received, and we have channeled resources to ensure that the evaluation process is finalized by the end of this financial year. Honorable members, over the past months, the mining industry has experienced a state of mining accidents and incidents, an issue that has raised great concern to the President and ourselves. To date, we have put together an audit plan that will see the review and monitoring of our mine safety standards. The MPRDA has opened doors for the substantial and meaningful participation of historically disadvantaged South Africans in the mining sector. With the continuing implementation of the MPRDA and the mining charter, we have seen an increase in the number of women participating in this industry, although a lot still needs to be done. We have also noted meaningful development on the communities where mining activities take place, as well as in the labor sending areas. We have gone a long way in improving the turnaround time for the processing of mining applications. Backlogs that we identified earlier in the year are now a thing of the past. Honorable members, our minister has over the past year engaged in discussions with SAWIMA in order to revitalize this organization and all that it stands for. During the year, We saw the official launch of their national office in Johannesburg and regional visits by the minister. The agenda of women empowerment and development, including meaningful participation in these sectors, can only be assured when sound administrative and financial bases are provided. Because real commitment of women in this area has been established. Women participation in the energy sector is unfortunately still lagging behind. The Malaysian Scholarship Program has continued to deliver positive results insofar as the youth development programs are concerned. In total, 62 South African students have benefited from this project, and our partnership with Petronas and the Malaysian government has grown stronger. I'm pleased to inform the honorable members that over the past weekend, we held the first graduation ceremony for the South African students under this program here in Cape Town. The aim was to give those parents and students who could not afford to travel all the way to Malaysia an opportunity to celebrate their great achievement. The extended graduation ceremonies are conducted in those countries that have a special relationship with the University of Technology. Our internal internship program has also grown in numbers. Since 1999, we have provided opportunities to a total of 392 participants. We have also increased the intern stipend to accommodate the financial challenges of our young participants. Honorable members, coming to the report on our performance, our plans are premised on our mission statement that basically covers the regulation and promotion of the minerals and energy sector for the benefit of all. When one looks at the department's five strategic objectives, one will notice how these link to our reason for existence, that is, the provision of services that would regulate and promote these sectors for the benefit of our customers. This therefore requires in our balanced scorecard approach that we place our customers at the top of our hierarchy of focus or perspectives to represent our long-term objectives. As a public service organization, we have interpreted our perspectives as follows. Our customer and stakeholder perspective focuses on fulfilling our mandate and deliver to the identified recipients of our service. Our internal processes perspective ensures that there is a provision of critical internal systems and processes to implement our strategy. And the learning and growth perspective ensures an adequately capacitated department in terms of knowledge of the personnel and the provision of necessary information. The financial perspective ensures the security of funding and the appropriate prioritization of the use of these resources. This was our attempt to indeed Chairperson align our organizational work with Kaplan's format of the balanced scorecard. As part of our plans on ensuring security of energy supply, as well as responding to the challenges, I'm now talking Chairperson to the customer and stakeholder perspective. Responding to the challenges of climate change, biofuels have been introduced as another option in our energy mix. During the year, intensive consultations nationwide were conducted and all inputs were considered for inclusion in the final strategy. It is envisaged that the biofuels industry will meet 75% of the renewable energy target as outlined in the white paper of renewable energy. Through the renewable energy subsidy scheme, 25 eligible projects have been registered, 9 on electricity with a capacity of 29 megawatts and 16 on biodiesel with a total capacity of 274,260 kiloliters per annum. The total subsidy required to fund this project is 137 million rand. To date, we have subsidized one hydro project to the value of 975,000 rand. Two electricity projects to an amount of 3.65 million rand. The inefficient use of energy in our country puts a strain on the energy supply. To address this, the department has continued to implement the energy efficiency strategy in the areas of standards, promotion of energy efficiency awareness, and other initiatives. Within the integrated national electrification program, we were faced with the challenges of poor and the absence of bulk infrastructure, especially in sparsely populated rural areas. For the program to continue, it was necessary for us to channel some of the electrification funds to the revamping of the bulk infrastructure, resulting in the reduced number of connections for the year. In total, 282 million rand was allocated to bulk infrastructure. As a result, out of the targeted 215,000 households, 1,000 schools and 50 clinics budgeted for the 2006-2007 financial year, we achieved 160,920 households, 926 schools, and 23 clinic connections. But I would like to add, Chairperson, that over and above this, we have been able to build quite a number of substations in order to ensure that next year when we start the process of the rollout of our electrification program, we won't encounter the challenges of the weak bulk infrastructure. The department also conducted electricity switch-ons in three of our provinces last year. These events do not only celebrate the electrification program in affected areas, but also provide the department with an opportunity to evaluate the impact of the program and interact with those communities. The department has implemented 11 asbestos projects in the Northern Cape and Northwest, and the communities have benefited in terms of employment. One local company was appointed as a contractor. Insofar as the slide 7 is concerned, Chairperson, which also talks to customer and stakeholder perspective, as part of our efforts to ensure access to energy by all South Africans, the DME, in collaboration with communities, Total South Africa, Sasol and other stakeholders, is setting up more integrated energy centers, the IEC's, around the country. The main objective is to bring affordable and sustainable energy services and information closer to the poor community. Underlying this is a strong social responsibility aimed at poverty alleviation, job creation, and capacity building. The IEC is owned and managed by a registered community cooperative with a board of directors and coordinated with other departmental initiatives through the Integrated Development Plan, the IDPs of municipalities. During the year, we plan to establish 10 integrated energy centers around the country. Challenges we experienced with some of these projects, resulting in us establishing 5 energy centers. The department has continued to monitor and evaluate the implementation of the three basic energy strategies. Honorable members, many of our poor families survive on often unsustainable projects like small-scale mining, which have, from time to time, proven to be dangerous. The small-scale mining directorate in the department has done much in supporting these SMME projects. Last year, we assisted 23 SMME projects via direct financial and technical assistance with an expectation of creating 1,000 jobs. We have also published a booklet that identifies small-scale mining projects and introduces these to potential investors. The transformation of the mining industry is being achieved through a rigorous implementation of the MPRDA and the mining charter. In the past year, the department granted 2,045 prospecting and mining rights. 1,200 of rights granted were from companies with strategic partnership with 8 DSA-controlled companies. The processing of conversion of old order mining rights has been very slow, with only 24% of applications received being finalized. This has been due mainly to compliance challenges in respect of the mining charter. In order to improve the levels of compliance, a process of monthly workshops with mining companies was commenced in April 2006. In the past year, 13 social plans workshops were held with industry players as well as municipality officials to align social and labor plans with IDPs and PGDS. Like all developing countries, we have over a period of years maintained a reasonable level of strategic crude stocks, which will cover any eventuality in the crude oil supply chain, which is always solved by geopolitical instability. As an integral part of that strategy, we have required our national oil company, PetroSA, to actively participate in Africa in the bidding rounds for both producing and restoration fields. Fuel shortages of December 2005, however, indicated to us a need to update our policy to include maintenance of finished product stocks in our portfolio of strategic stocks. The policy review further indicated a need to diversify supply of oil away from a total reliance on Middle East and to increase state participation in the petroleum value chain. Mine health and safety. The review of Mineral Act regulation is very close to finalization. In an effort to monitor and enforce compliance to health and safety standards, inspectors conduct regular inspections and audits. Targets were not met in the year under review, due, among other things, to staff turnover in the inspectorate. The Mine Health and Safety Council set occupational health and safety targets for the mining sector. The target is 20% improvement on fatality rates year on year. These improvements should make the sector's health and safety performance comparable to the world best in 2013. However, improvement the year under review was zero. Reactive work in the form of investigations and inquiries continued to claim a lot of time of inspectors. This legal process takes a lot of time because mines bring legal counsel into these inquiries and investigations, and then the process gets prolonged. The year 2005 saw the birth of the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, NERSA, which took over the regulation of our fledging pipe gas, our petroleum pipelines, and our electricity industry. In the period under review, we began the process of developing regulations as demanded by the Gas and Petroleum Pipelines Act. These regulations provide guidance to NERSA as well as give effect to the government policy stances. The publication of safety standards for the nuclear industry was a significant stone in the year under review. For the first time, such safety standards have been published for South Africa. In terms of the Disaster Management Act, the department is the national organ of state responsible to coordinate nuclear emergency planning at national level and the two established emergency planning steering and oversight committees, that is CUPAC and NEXA, have been functioning very well. The implementation of the radioactive waste management policy has progressed well with the establishment of the National Committee on Radioactive Waste Management and the completion of a draft bill on the Radioactive Waste Management Agency. The implementation of the Nuclear Liabilities Management Plan has also with regard to the internal process of perspective chairperson, during 2006, regulations under the Petroleum Products Amendment Act were promulgated. Excuse me. A licensing system for all petroleum activities was developed through the assistance of the Norwegian Capacity Building Program. In the first 6 months of operation, 12,040 license applications were received and they are now being processed. The process of reviewing and updating our financial policies and procedures was started during the year under review. As at the end of the year, we have completed 60% of the process as against the target of 70%. This was due to the long internal consultation process as these processes and procedures needed to be consulted upon with the labor representatives and governance structures within the department. The review of the mineral regulation branch structures during the year under review gave the department an opportunity to introduce appropriate and effective implementing and monitoring structures for the implementation of the MPRDA. This came at a time when the department was experiencing backlogs in the processing of mining applications due to the capacity of our regional offices, not matching the rapidly growing number of applications received. With the commitment of all staff concerned, these backlogs were eliminated within the first 6 months of the financial year. Learning and growth perspective. Employment equity is one of the department's key focus areas. As at the end of the reporting period, employment equity in terms of race stood at 79% black against 21% white employees. And in terms of gender, these stand at 32% female at both senior and middle management levels. The biggest challenge for the department continues to be the recruitment and retention of employees with scarce skills. The recruitment of disabled persons has also remained a big challenge for us. As at the end of March 2007, the total number of vacancies within the department has been reduced to 113 from 187 from the previous year. The average turnaround time for the filling of vacancies was improved from 3 months to 2.5 months. The department's workplace skills plan was approved in September 2006. The plan takes into consideration the training and development needs of the employees as indicated in their job descriptions and performance assessment. This process makes sure that all training and development projects are aligned to the skills requirements of the department as a whole. The structure of corporate services was revised to be in line with the department's strategy, and this was followed by the appointment of a deputy director general to take charge of all support services functions of the department, with the exception of finance, supply chain, and information management functions, which functions resort under the office of the chief financial officer, as is required by Christmas. The Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate was also restructured in line with the cabinet decision and the implementation thereof scheduled to take place from the ensuing financial year. The mineral regulation and energy component structures were also revised to strengthen their capacity, mostly at regional office level, in response to the recommendations of the Vulindlela Capacity Assessment Project. In response to the review of the HR processes, the department has developed an integrated and computerized human resource system that will align the strategic plan, vision, mission with the objectives of individual directorates, link employee performance and development to the department's strategic and business plan, manage performance appraisal, effectively manage the lead process and facilitate HR management reporting via a dashboard reporting system. With regard to the financial perspective, the department received a budget allocation of 2.635 million for the year under review. Only 1.04% of this budget was not spent, due mainly to unfilled vacancies and delays experienced in the payment of renewable energy subsidies, where applicants were not concluding their application requirements on time. The main sources of receipts for the department are royalties and prospecting fees collected from mining companies. During the year, the under review, recoveries were more than anticipated. These came mainly from royalty payments received from the individual mines. At the beginning of the year, we targeted to collect revenue of 121 million, as at the end of the year, an amount of 191 million was collected. The increase in department revenue collected is attributed to the boom in the commodity prices experienced in the sector during the year, as well as the increased enforcement and audit of returns. Chairperson, honorable members, we thank you.
Members, I think without any delay, we want to go straight to the discussion of the report and questions and so on. But just to say that whilst noting what the DG has said about the format we have asked on reporting, I think it's a well-noted endeavor, because this is how everybody would want to report. I mean, has started already this year, that so that we are able to trace through different perspectives of the balance scorecard. I think that in terms of the perspectives, all five of them have been taken on board. We will open this opportunity then to members to discuss, debate, question. It's your opportunity, members. We have Daniel, Mr. talking about the administrator of Lucas in that order. Then
thanks. Chair, mine for the DG is on energy. On the section of energy, in fact, the report generally highlights this thing if you consider Askeza and Jimsa. And we always said when we receive reports in mineral and energy, we also, in our mind, place the report as far as the broader economic matters are concerned, like infrastructure and so on. Jipsa or Akisa. So the issue of the highlight is good on human development. But the area on infrastructure, on energy, I would like to have more explanation there as to exactly according to your scorecard what the objectives of the department are. This is because last week we were with ESCOM giving us a report. And ESCOM said, look, one of the things that was a bit of a concern was saying, look, because we're just building extra infrastructure like power station and so on, it's better if you don't increase the demand for electricity. And we are amazed because we don't see how, I mean, South Africa is said to be one of the fastest growing economies in the world. So if a fast economy is growing and you say you don't increase the demand for the supply of electricity, how will that happen? Because you can't tell developers that don't develop, we're still waiting for power stations. But then in your report, this is the question, in your report, and they said the alternative energy is focusing on solar system. In your report, they are here that the alternative energy is 75% going to be supplied by biofuel, and that doesn't reconcile with ESCOM one thing. I don't understand that. But the main question is this one, that according to your report, are you happy that while we are upgrading or updating our infrastructure, especially with energy, in the time being, in the interim period of about 7 years or so, electricity, the supply of electricity in the country will cope with the demand that is there. That's not coming clear in your report.
Honorable Dreyer, thank you, Madam Acting Chief. I'm a new member on this committee, as I've said, and it may be a question out of ignorance, but if the DG can just tell me, what is the level, the percentage of unfilled vacancies? I haven't seen your report, and you refer to the unfilled vacancy. That's one reason why you haven't spent your budget completely. What's the percentage, and why aren't you filling them? Honourable Hagar-Gorfield?
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the questions is the latter question which was asked by Mr. Driver. But the other one is on employment equity, because you seem to be trying to address it. But in terms of the people living with disability, you said it's still a challenge, but can you come clearly, what is your plan to overcome that? And again, why is it not, are you not getting these people from outside? What is the problem? Thank you.
Honorable Luca.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue that I really wanted to ask was the small-scale miners. You know, I think there's a major problem with this year, especially these people do get their mining rights. But the difficulty from moving from that position of obtaining the prospecting rights into the fully fledged actual operational is a big problem. And I don't know what we can do, but I think that I think the departure should come to the systems of the people. And I'm very happy about the biofuel industry, because as we see the price of crude, it just, I think in the course of my lifetime, it would reach $100 a barrel. And I think we should also put much more emphasis on that to supplement and find out how we can help. And I'm not sure where we are with the pebble feed reactor, because I think, I thought that was going to be somewhere nearby where we could be saying that is going to be the alternative supply of energy. I think it is just so where it is. And then I do see also that if we take compare from Russia, the percentage of women have also dropped in the department. What's the cause of that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is on the occupational health and safety. I see here the target is 20% improvement. But are we really saying we have improvement in the mine safety? Because every time we proud ourselves to say, now we are doing well, then all of a sudden there comes a disaster. Are we really on the right track? Thank you.
I'll give over to Comrade Sandile Gena, the DG, and welcome COSATU. I'm sure the energetic comrades from COSATU are here. They want to hear answers about energy. Yeah, energetic answers.
Thank you very much, Jay. I'll start with the Honorable Denis' question, the infrastructure. The energy infrastructure. I agree very much with him, the chair, that the issue of infrastructure, of energy infrastructure, is one of the most pressing issues that the government is currently faced with. It is so because of the fact that historically we have had surplus capacity of electricity generation in South Africa. And as a result, there has been no investment in new generation capacity. Now, what we have now done, we have begun now to source new and additional generation capacity for electricity. It is for that reason that I think today the cabinet committee is discussing the electricity master plan, which electricity master plan seeks to address the issue of electricity infrastructure in the country. It is going to guide, that document is going to guide the process of developing new capacity. But it is also important that the fact that historically we have had a surplus generation capacity have created some kind of an untenable behavior on the part of the South African electricity consumer. They are very wasteful in terms of electricity. So it is for that reason, therefore, that ESCOM, we're saying that whilst we are addressing the supply side of electricity, we must also not lose sight of the demand side of electricity in our country. As we are building a new generation capacity, we must also ensure that the energy that we have, the electricity that we have, is consumed in an efficient and responsible way, which is something that historically we have not been addressing all along. So that's why now we are now focusing on issues of energy efficiency. It's because we want to be able to sustain the availability of electricity whilst we are boosting the capacity to generate more. The same as with the petroleum. I think you have heard Petro SA now announcing that they will now be very active in building infrastructure for petroleum in South Africa, guided by the master plan, the hydrocarbons master plan, that we also released a couple of months ago. So I think we are doing something with regard to those two issues, that is, the management of the demand side as well as the management of the supply side of electricity. It is important that we have to change the behavior of our customers in the meantime, so that our customers must understand that this is a scarce resource. So since it is a scarce resource, it must be used responsibly. You know, if you go to Europe, for instance, you'll find out that, you know, in hotels, for instance, you know, the more, I mean, when you get out of the of your room, the electricity switches off by itself, and it comes back again once you come in and you install your key into the slot there, that then brings that back to the water. In South Africa, you'll find all these big buildings at night when nobody is using that electricity, but it's all illuminated. Electricity is used, you know, for no purpose at all. So those are the things that we are now trying to emphasize, that let's also manage the demand side while we are also managing the supply side. With regard to the reason for unsealed posts, Honorable Dre, I'll give you the percentage right now, but this is a function of the fact that the Department of Minerals and Energy is a knowledge intensive kind of a department. You know, it is the kind of a department where you need people with specific kind of qualifications. Which specific qualifications, you know, are scarce not only in the public sector but also in the private sector. We're talking here of nuclear scientists, we're talking here of geologists, we're talking here of mining engineers, we're talking here of electrical engineers. You know, those are the people that don't come readily in the economy. Actually, this is what is happening now, not only in South Africa, it happens globally. The same kind of the situation, therefore, obtains in relation to disability, to attracting people with disability. Because those people with disability must also have those kinds of skills. So it's the same kind of a problem that we have here, because it's so difficult to you cannot, let's say, for instance, in the economy, of what many people who are qualified as BA students having majored in biblical studies, you cannot convert those people into mining engineers, you cannot convert them into geologists, you cannot convert them into nuclear scientists. Whereas in other departments, you can convert those people into managers. You can make them, you can train them, you can imbue them with skills that will enable them to manage those departments. But it's not the case with the Department of Minerals and Energy, you know, because of the fact that you need that. And again, you are going to be faced now with a challenge of ensuring that as you bring in those people, you must also be drawing them from the previously disadvantaged South Africans. And they are very scarce. How many, it's a general outcry that black South Africans were not trained in mathematics and science. You know, it's a historical fact. We cannot run away from it. You know, our universities were not producing those. We're producing these biblical studies students, etc., etc. And it becomes very difficult now to do that for us. It is for that reason now that we are combining this now with this Malaysian scholarship program. Because the Malaysian scholarship program enables us now to train chemical engineers, to train electrical engineers. And it is now, you know, the mechanism that we are putting into place in order to ensure that we can address this kind of a problem. Last year, we had about 187 vacancies, yeah? Yes, and we have reduced that now to 116. 216. Yeah, and what is the vacancy rate? Yeah, that's 6.9%. In a department of knowledge intensive. Small-scale miners, I agree with the Honourable Member, it's a big challenge. It's a big challenge because these are subsistence miners. And by definition, since they are subsistence miners, they don't have the kind of sophistication that you need for you to produce the EMPs and all those things. And get a bankable document, etc., etc., etc. But unfortunately, the economy doesn't have that kind of sympathy. When it looks at you, it looks at you as a person who is seeking an opportunity in it. It doesn't differentiate as to who you are. And it is for that reason, therefore, that we are trying now to intervene through the National Small-Scale Mining Council that assists them to produce this document, to assist them to produce these vendable documents that are needed for further production, that also assists them to produce the EMC. It is a difficult thing, and again, it's not going to be possible for us to have a two set of standards in our regulatory regime. A two set of standards that is going to say that this is a standard for ordinary business people. This one is for small scale miners. Because once you start doing that, insofar as environment protection is concerned, you are causing a problem that you'll end up decreasing to generations to come. So we were caught up with that kind of a situation when we were dealing with the policy position in relation to this matter. And we thought that the first thing that we have to do, let's just have one set of standards that would apply to everybody. But with the intervention of the government through the NSC, we believe that we'll then be able to assist them, you know, to meet up with the required standards. The drop of percentage of women in the department, yes, it's also a function of the same kind of argument that I've advanced in relation to the scarcity of skills. An example that I can give you, we had one in 10 who was in after 8 months in the department was recruited by another department as a deputy director. It's because of the competition that is currently taking place within the department itself, I mean within the government itself. We compete over our resources, and if you cannot pay more, they take that the intensity of knowledge that is required, perhaps, let's say, in another department will not be as the same as it is in the department. They can therefore make do with an experience of 8 years of exposure in, let's say, in the mineral economy. but we cannot. We have to train you and you get exposed for a longer time so that we can with confidence say that you'll be able to provide us with the necessary information that mineral economists must provide us. So that's why it's easy for other departments then to go and take some of our people. But I think we still are very competitive in terms of the percentage of women in the department, because we are standing at 32%. We have exceeded, by the way, the required percentage. TDMR, honorable members, project, TDMR, is no longer residing with the Department of Minerals and Energy. It is now residing with the Department of Public Enterprises. So we are not in a position to supply any answers in relation to that. Occupational health.
Chair, with a question relating to occupational health and safety, I think the question was, is there improvement? Because we often say, yes, there's improvement, but then you have mining disasters. And I'm going to go back a bit in history. If you look at years prior to the promulgation of the Mine Health and Safety Act, the South African mining sector recorded a number of mining disasters. I mean, starting from 1926, where you had one incident killing 126 people. And I'm not going to mention all of them. We had Rovick, we had Colebrook disaster, which one incident killed 437 people in the 1960s. The latest disaster was 1993, a Valdrus disaster where 104 people were killed. And that incident led to the review of occupational health and safety legislation in the country in 1997. Mine Health and Safety Act was promulgated. And since then, we've never recorded any major disaster, because that legislation requires mining industry to put to develop occupational health and safety policies, do risk management, and to a greater degree, it has significantly reduced mining disasters in the country. Yes, our level of fatalities in the country is still high. I mean, the industry is killing around 200 people a year, and a lot of work still needs to go into that to really bring those levels down. If you look at that figure also in a historical context, in 87, our industry was killing close to 1,000 people a year. 97, 10 years later, it was 500, and currently we are at 200. And we need to put a lot of work to bring the levels down. So in a historical context, there is improvement. Disaster accidents have significantly been reduced.
What I would like to add here too is that the fact that there has been this change in the nature of the incidents and accidents, and therefore a change also in the number of people who get affected by those accidents, doesn't mean that we don't have a problem. It means that we do have a problem. And the fact that we've been able to reduce it over a period, to reduce the nature of accidents and the number of people who get affected thereby, means that it is also possible for us to do the same with regard to the current situation. So what we are now saying is that if the mining companies were able to put the measures they did put in place, which resulted in the change of the nature of accidents and therefore the number of people who are affected thereby, it means that they can also do something in order to address the current situation. The current situation, in no way are we saying that is acceptable.
Honourable members, since you are satisfied with the answers,
And I think the department needs to correct the DG is concurring with you that there are problems. But those problems need to be sorted out, because we don't want the department to come next year and say same situation still exists. I'm sure we are saying we accept the report, but one death is a death too many. We don't want any death. One outage is the outage too many. We want energy. I know I always look in town when I walk around in town and see these big businesses that have got that sell cars. The electricity that they consume at night, it is too much. And there's nobody at night. It's a showroom, in fact. There's nobody at night and people don't walk around at night looking at cars. I think that's another problem that needs to be solved, that energy must be used in the right way. But I wonder if Comrade Kekana wants another bite.
Comrade DG, while we are accepting the need to save electricity, but I can agree with the example of the hotel, but I can't imagine, to be honest, Johannesburg, Pretoria, Durban, Cape Town being dark cities because we're saving electricity. I mean, you know, we in the third world, we always say we want world-class standards, international standards. I mean, is it not? The question is, is it not in the way of development in a modern state that you've got to light cities? Whether people are there, there should be street lights and big windows in metropolitan areas, in cities, and get them lit. To be honest, I really can't conceptualize flying over South Africa. And it is just a tax issue because South Africa is saving electricity. I'm just saying, is that not a normal thing?
Honorable Mabe?
Yeah, thanks, Chief. Pardon my ignorance because I don't speak English, but I became interested, especially because of the next item that will be dealt with. Like the previous speaker has said, I also don't understand the saving of electricity vis-a-vis the trial that we have. I really don't understand. I would understand if, for instance, mass lights are switched off during the day, but at night, definitely we need them because of the level of crime in our country. The shops that you are talking about, if it's dark in the street, people will break in. So I don't understand the rationale. But the reason why I wanted to ask the question besides this one, I come from the Northwest Province and I always get worried when I see the fatalities around Turkstall, around that area. Actually, what happens to mine owners? What responsibility is expected of them as a department, from the department, when fatalities have occurred, and you see the same mine managers saying serious steps must be taken against those who are responsible? You know, I ask myself as I watch the news, that who are they talking about when they say serious action must be taken against those who are responsible? They are the owners. What is the rationale behind this thing? So, Chair, maybe I'm ignorant, but I really find it difficult to understand. And from the department, what should be happening to these people? We reduce the level of fatalities, but what should be happening? What kind of responsibility, social responsibility, or whatever responsibility do they take? Thank you, Chair.
The electricity issue is also a very sticky issue, and we go between two departments, and I think that's also part of the problem, because I must express the concern when Eskom talks about increasing the tariff, because we still forget that people who have been disadvantaged in the past are the ones who are suffering again now, and they are faced with this new increase. So it is taking it further and further away from the people that we say we want to help. So I think, I'm not sure what to do. It's a real dilemma. And I do agree that, you know, you drive through cities, you find a building with all the streetlights working, but you see a government building full of light all over. And I think that is the point I would agree with the DG, that we should try and minimize on that sort of thing. And the other thing is that I said this last time, the solar heating, water, I think with all new buildings, we should try and emphasize this here, is to see that those buildings have this in, so it's built into the system, because it's easier to do it while you're building. So those issues are really close to my heart, and I worry about them all the time. And I was just worried about the information on page 104 in our report here. They were talking about the most significant control weaknesses identified, and say the process followed to create new user accounts and to amend the rights of existing were inadequate. I don't know if you can explain this all. It's page 104 of the report.
Okay, I'll answer the other questions while we're still checking this. Now, let's go back to the issue of saving electricity. I think what we are saying here is that let's use electricity. We are not saying that let's not use electricity. Where it is necessary, let's use electricity. But as we do that, let's do that responsibly. We are talking about the responsible use of this resource. We are not saying that don't use this resource. You know, the issue of lighting, this is not the only way in which you can save electricity. You know, there are so many other ways in which you can save electricity. If you as a country, you feel that, you know, you want your cities to be lit throughout the night, that's fine, that's the choice that you are making. But there are other ways in which you can do you can do the saving of electricity, like switching off geysers, for instance. Because you need that geyser to be active only when you want to use it. When you don't want to use that geyser, switch it off. For instance, if you can switch off the geysers in Cape Town, in Tshwane, and Johannesburg, the metropoles, that you will be saving an equivalent of a power station if you do that. Those such small things, you know, can assist in saving electricity. And again, what the Honorable Daniel is talking about, the development and all that, lighting, flying over cities, you know, in darkness. You know, we have to bear in mind, but those are the things that happen in normal circumstances. We are facing a crisis in South Africa. Let's admit that we are facing a possible crisis of energy supply, and therefore you cannot enjoy all the luxury that you enjoy normally. You know, when you are facing a crisis, if you have a crisis at home, if you have got a budget crisis at home, you cannot afford the luxury of having all nice things that you normally have. Dressed in nice clothes, and then you will cut somewhere in terms of your budget. So that's what we are saying. We are saying to you, South African, that reduce the consumption of electricity where that is not basic, where that is not necessary. You know, we use electricity unnecessarily at times. And that has developed as a result of the abundance of this energy that we have had in the past. That has informed and shaped our behavior. So we're saying now the situation is changing, let's change our behavior. It's like telling your children that, you know, when you normally have sufficient money, in the morning they can have eggs, bacon, cheese, bologna, all of them, in one thick slice of bread. You're saying, no. You don't need all these things for your own survival. For your survival, you need bread and butter and tea. And during this situation, until I get employment, you will do this. I'm looking for a job, my son. You see? You will go back to that situation once I find a job. You see? So that's what we are saying. We are saying that we are busy building the capacity to generate sufficient electricity that will restore your situation to what it used to be before. But we are also saying that once we do that, please be bad happy that you acquired during the time of abundance. You must share them. Because going forward, you don't need that. You have to begin to act responsible. So the issue of mine managers and fatalities and their responsibilities. Their responsibilities are in the law. And there are certain measures that ought to be taken against them when they have transgressed the law. Last week, I was on record as having said that we will now begin to enforce the law in earnest. And we've had challenges in the past in terms of the law enforcement, because if you look at common law in South Africa, if as a result of your negligence somebody dies, you ought to be charged with culpable of homicide. That doesn't exonerate the mine managers. If as a result of their negligence people die, they have responsibilities to these employees. They have responsibilities to these workers. And if as a result of their omission or commission with regard to that particular responsibility, they are found wanting, they ought to be charged with culpable homicide. And that has also been incorporated in our Mine Health and Safety Act. It's not something new. The Mine Health and Safety Act reinforces that common law position. But because the issue of prosecution doesn't lie within the domain of the Department of Minerals and Energy, but lies elsewhere, it has been a challenge for us to have those kinds of prosecutions, etc., etc., etc. But lately we have had a discussion with the Director General of Justice where we have agreed that we are now going to cooperate and work together to ensure that we are able to enforce the law as we find it. And I hope that with that kind of coordination and cooperation that is now going to begin to exist between the two departments, will then be able at least to prosecute one mine manager for death in the mine.
So you see, that's why I was asking this question. Because I know that the law is there. And the capacity that we always talk about in departments to enforce the laws that are there. And definitely, those who are victims would not be in a position to take any action. Their families, if they don't have money, won't have that opportunity to take any action. But to a certain extent, when the DG says they are now collaborating with the Department of Justice, it would be important for this committee to know, at least by when, DG, do you intend taking such actions? Because you can't just talk. Like I said, I'm from the Northwest Province and I always get worried. So by when can you, as a department, start taking action, both departments, so that the
the families of those people will know that the law has been put into action, not in the, in the statute books, but into action. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is you have regenerated me. I'm going back to my health and safety. DG, last week when we were with the other group and also the geologist, were saying they map and they can sensor where there's going to be tremor or earthquake, and at the same time they can notify the mines that such and such a thing is going to happen at your site. And then we come across these contractors who have been contracted not belonging to the mine but working, and most of the accidents come through those people who have got, who are contracted to have workers in the mine. Those are the people who are suffering. What action is taken to make sure that those people are well informed and trained to look after their workers? Thank you, sir.
I'm giving over to the department.
Thank you, Chair. The question of contractor management in the sector has always been a problem raised at a number of forums. But when you look at the Mine Health and Safety Act, it departs from other legislation. For example, contractors in the mining sector are deemed as employees, not as contractors. And so the same responsibility and duties that employers in the sector have towards their employees, they have the similar duties and responsibilities on contractors. So in many areas, that's where we enforcing that understanding and looking at contractors as employees and treating them separately. So they need to be trained, risk needs to be identified, they need to be aware of that, they need to be trained so that they can take the necessary action when they are exposed to dangerous situations.
Thanks, with regard to when are we going to take action, I would like to point out to the committee that we will only take action in reaction to a particular kind of a situation. But insofar as it relates to us now coming together, because I'm not clear about what action, whether the coordinating action or the actual action of prosecution. But if it's so, if it relates to the coordinating action, yesterday we had a meeting already, we had the first meeting with the NPA and the police, as well as the Department of Justice. So we have already started the process of coordinating. So that coordinating process which we have now started will place us in a good position for us now to act when a situation that warrants that kind of coordinated effort arises.
Sorry, fatalities are occasional. As a public representative, I'm interested, when is action going to be taken to assist those people? No. The coordination is fine. We can meet even for the next 2 years, continue meeting and strategizing. But the real action to help these people who, the families who end up suffering.
You know, in terms of the law, you know, because at public level, we apply the law as we find it. the honorable members here make the law, and we apply it as we find it. And the law as we find it right now, in our enforcement processes, allows us to do certain things. And the giving of assistance to the families of the deceased is not one of the issues that, in terms of the law, we ought to do as the Department of Minerals and Energy. Insofar as that particular kind of action, I think what we need to do now is to find out what it is that we can do in order to assist and even assist the law. If there is a need for the law to be changed so that it can allow that, so be it. But as we find the law right now, it doesn't give us the scope to take any particular kind of action in relation to that particular kind of issue.
The answer, but I just want to say, as you said, that we accept the report, but there are many issues that need to be tightened up so that next time when the department comes to us, we don't have the same questions again. I think the same issue, and I was just ready to thank the department now, and Honorable Treya wants to come back again.
Madam Acting Chair, thank you for your indulgence. I need to come in here to back up my colleague here on my left-hand side. Law enforcement is of utmost importance. If we don't enforce the law, it's just a piece of paper that can be torn up. The law is only as good as the implementation thereof. And if I'm hearing the Director General correctly, he says there are aspects of the law that they can't implement because of the way it's written. Maybe their hands are bound or their loopholes, I'm not sure exactly, didn't go into the details, but I did understand that they can't always enforce the law because of the way it's written. Now, if that is correct, he must inform this committee so that we can then take the necessary steps as lawmakers, as the legislature, so we can change it to make it easier or to assist them to enforce it. But we must be informed about this. Otherwise, it's a meaningless piece of paper. So that is maybe a request to the Director General so that we can tighten up on that issue.
Thank you, BG. I don't think you need to respond to that. But the problem is law enforcement. The law is there, but how do we enforce the law? I think that is clear to all of us.
Let me just clarify this, please, so that we don't have any misunderstanding in this regard. The law says that where people die as a result of negligence on the part of a mine manager or whatever, that person can be prosecuted. And now, that's the law that is being enforced by the Department of, that is being administered by the Department of Minerals and Energy. But the Department of Minerals and Energy doesn't have the mandate to prosecute. That's the challenge that we're talking about. It is another department now that has the mandate to prosecute. So what I'm saying here is that there is a need for a coordinated effort between all the departments that are responsible for the enforcement of this particular piece of legislation. So it is for that reason then that we have come now together with all the agencies that are going to make it possible for us to enforce the law. That's why we met yesterday the police, because they have to investigate the case. That's why yesterday we met the prosecutor, the NPA, because they have to prosecute. And that's why we met yesterday the Department of Justice, because under them resort judges and magistrates who have to preside over the cases in relation to this particular situation. So that's what I was saying.
Thank you. I'll give over to the chairperson. I was just holding the fort.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do, because Okay. So we finish. Thank you. Member. I just got a brief here from the acting chair. As always, these kind of reports are a work in progress. The start has been today from the point of view of the department, how we wish people to report to us from now onwards. Obviously, there are areas, sticky areas, which keep on coming up. The reason why I asked Smith yesterday, he made a point about what the report speaks to, the one the DG spoke, the notes which the DG spoke on. And it's coming even now, this whole issue of mine health and safety. But a very interesting point, because his intervention yesterday was more on trying to look at the state's coffers to ensure that whatever goes with the safety, the health and safety of people in the mines are looked into in a much more broader way. If there's always been a particular way of looking at it, but how if we stretch the state's fund to take this aspect on board? So that was the intervention yesterday and my interpretation thereof, which I think, you know, tallies with both the annual report from the department and the presentation we're going to be getting now from the NUM. DG and the team, the department, thank you very much. I don't know whether members did represent me here. I don't know. Because they did. So I would want to hear from them, because I wanted to talk about Nexa, but it's okay. Thank you very much. The delegation from NUM. Members, as the program states here, that we are having the delegation from NUM on the issue I've just spoken about, the accidents and fatalities in mind. But we also have Dr. Barker from the chamber. Dr. Barker has asked for our indulgence on this matter because it affects them as well. We thought it's only logical that we could give him an opportunity as well so that we get these views and be able to interrogate them from that point of view. Okay. Oh, I'm told there's a tea break now for 10 minutes. Why is the